I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Martin Luther King Day was Monday, but cities across the country are continuing to celebrate the life and achievements of Dr. King all this week. I'll speak with the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs at Rollins College, Zakia Brown, about what the college and the city of Orlando are doing to commemorate the legacy of Dr. King. Also, a new report released by the State Attorney's Office showed that hate crimes are on the rise in Florida. 90.7's Amy Kiley speaks with Kaiser University Law Professor Kian Ware about the increase in numbers. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by Zakia Brown. Zakia is the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs at Rollins College. Zakia, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this week, cities across the nation are celebrating the life and the legacy of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., including Orlando and Winter Park. And what are some of the things that are happening later this week in Central Florida to celebrate this anniversary?
At Rollins College, we actually try to make sure we celebrate Dr. King and his legacy and all of those who worked with him, as well as those who are continuing his fight in various aspects. So today we will have a equality forum that will take place that has a list of guest panelists from all over Central Florida who have been advocates and activists in various walks of lives. This discussion will talk about the recent closings with Defense of Marriage Act. So how DOMA was a big conversation topic in 2013. We're going to revisit that and see what exactly has that done for the LGBTQ community. What impact has it had? Has it affected everyone? What were there some of the reviews and what were some of the challenges to have it reviewed and shot down? Then we're also going to have a discussion around the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That was also something that took place in the summer of 2013 that was kind of not talked about so much in the media, but was very big in the conversation for various communities. Mm-hmm. We'll also look at immigration laws, which will be very big for the upcoming elections. And then looking at disability laws, where are they? Is that even a conversation topic at all? Disability laws tend to be a little more not in the forefront when you have a conversation when it comes to politics, but it is something that still has a very, very big backing when it comes to supporters of what are we doing and how accessible are we as a community, and especially for Rollins, how accessible we are as a college campus.
Mm-hmm. The immigration issue, some people you speak to express a little concern or a sense of disappointment with the way things are moving or not moving. Is that sort of a widely held view, a sense of disappointment? Do you think people are still positive that the change is coming there?
I think people are hopeful that change will be coming. And it reaches beyond the Latino community, though. And that's the biggest thing that we want to bring some information to as well. We will have Sister Ann Kendricks from the Hope Community Apopka, Hope Community Center in Apopka, who will talk about that from her perspective and who and her clientele. And that community itself is a very large migrant community, but it's not only the Latino community. It also does cater to the Caribbean community or anyone that you could think of that would be considered as an immigrant within our culture and our society. So I think there are all individuals are very hopeful that there will be some reform that would be positive for everyone and will be in the best light for everyone.
Do you think when people think of immigration reform, do they only really see it if they're not, you know, personally affected by the immigration debate? They sort of think of it in that monochromatic sense of it's an issue that only affects one segment of the population?
Of course. If you look at how our media plays out, at times it's when you talk about immigration, who do you see in the forefront? Who do you see being portrayed? And unfortunately, that's the image that it has been set for us. So, yeah, if you are not really aware of what it means or how it has been played out, then you will think it's only affecting the Latin community. Mm-hmm. But it's very wide.
In July, it's the 50th anniversary of the passing of the Civil Rights Act. And, of course, last year there was the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. Which of those two events do you think is more important, or do you think it's all just part of that continuum of the struggle for civil rights and equality?
You can't look at one without looking at the other. I feel like the March on Washington was that segue for everything else that has come after that. So Even before that, it was a segue for everything else that has come after that. So it's kind of hard for, especially me particularly, to look at one and say it's one more important than the other. It wasn't only Dr. King who was a part or who orchestrated those movements. So for me, it's continuing to celebrate all individuals who were a part of the March on Washington, as well as every other celebration that we have that's going to follow and mm-hmm. continue to follow.
Do you feel like civil rights now, though, is broadened out in some ways, in a lot more ways, from the struggle for equal rights for African Americans in the 1960s, and now it's so many more things than that? Is it more difficult now for people to kind of seize onto the issue and get behind civil rights struggles for that reason?
It depends on how you define civil rights. I think we've changed the conversation and language to become more equality or equity more than civil rights. And some may, of course, argue that. But I think to make it a little more softer and acceptable, we've changed the conversation. And yes, it has gotten extremely larger than just equal rights for African Americans, because you are talking about religious freedom, and you are talking about sexuality and sexual identity and expression. You are talking about diverse cultural acceptance and equal rights for all. So it has gone from one perspective, and I think it has extremely expanded since then, which is wonderful, because now it makes all of us as a society look at what really makes us a diverse community, a diverse society. Mm-hmm. And it's not just racial. It's all these other things that makes us who we are.
What do you think Dr. King would say if he could see how things are now and this whole discussion we're having? What would he say about the definition of civil rights and this kind of struggle for equality?
He would probably say, "My God, look where we are." I don't know if it was his vision to see that all of this will come to fruition, where we are looking at various aspects of diversity and multiculturalism and acceptance of equality and of individuals. So I would probably believe that he's smiling and probably some tears as well, but just smiling to say, this is where we are.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, too, about another event later in the week, the Florida Modern Day Slavery Museum. Tell me a little bit about this. What's this exhibition about? What does it do, and what kind of things are you trying to highlight here?
Coalition of Immokalee Workers, farm workers, or they gather various information about a recent, not even a recent case, but it kind of ends off at a recent case that took place where these individuals were pretty much treating their farm workers inhumanely. So mm-hmm. They had a lawsuit and everything that took place, and the coalition, the CIW, they actually took it to where they showed you the findings and the end result of that case to prosecute those individuals who were treating the individuals poorly. But it took a while. So it goes through the timeline of how long it took for this to take place and to become something that our government was aware of to correct it. And they also show you how individuals are, I say, trafficked when they're in this cargo truck, and actually with the chains and the shackles that you don't think that you'll still see, but they're still being utilized. And it just goes through the history and conversations with individuals who've been a part of this, this experience of not being treated fairly just to earn a living.
I'm speaking with Zakiya Brown, Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs at Rollins College. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7. I'm Matthew Petty. You can join the conversation on Facebook or Twitter. You can also send us an email at intersection@wmfe.org. Now, as Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs at Rollins, obviously this is a big week for you, but what are some of the other things you do throughout the year to promote these issues surrounding multiculturalism in Central Florida here?
We do quite a lot. We try to make sure that we tackle every aspect as much as possible when you think of, again, multiculturalism and diversity. So, of course, with the celebration of Cultural Heritage Months, we make sure there's at least something that speaks to each cultural identity that is representative of our campus community and our global society as well. We make sure that we look at some of the issues that may challenge some of these communities and these cultures, and how can we be more supportive and more aware as to how we can combat some of them and be effective citizens of our communities. So, of course, like within Hispanic Heritage Month, we do a great celebration around that. And we make sure we bring our students in to help us make sure that we're doing things that are things that they want to see, but are also representative of who they are. We celebrate Black History Month. We celebrate LGBT History Month, Women's History Month. We make sure that we give awareness and acknowledgement to all of the cultural holidays. And we pull in each person of the community of Rawlins to make sure that we're doing that accurately. So as an individual who does not identify with various cultures or various spiritual backgrounds, I will never try to be one to speak on it, but I will look for my colleagues and my students to help me bring that awareness and that information to the campus community that's representative of who they are and in a positive aspect.
Do you get the idea, or do you get a sense that the kind of the makeup of students at Rawlins is changing at all? I mean, in your time at the in this office, have you noticed any sort of changes there? Like, is it becoming more diverse?
From my time, I've only been at Rawlins for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So in that time, I will say the diversity is becoming more vocal, and it's becoming more more. I wouldn't say more in your face, but it's more present. You see the diversity. So when I first arrived to Rawlins, I wasn't able to see various cultures, but now I can see the presence. Other than hearing about them through data, I can see it. So I would definitely say, yeah, it's changing where people are more visible and, mm-hmm. and they're more celebratory of who they are and how they identify. So definitely.
What do you think that is? Why do you think it's more vocal, as you say?
Empowerment. It's of course, generations change of college students, so some may be a little more reserved and shy to say this is who I am, this is how I identify, but then you may have others who are more proud to say I'm okay with this is who I am and allow me to introduce you to who I am and not what society says I am or who society says I should be. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of things have taken place within our within the U.S. and within our world globally that has provided our students with some empowerment, who want to give that awareness and that enlightenment and not feel as though they have to stay silent because of perceptions and misunderstandings.
Mm-hmm. I guess one example of that recently might be, which really sort of brought this whole debate over civil rights to the forefront, was the Trayvon Martin incident mm-hmm. in Central Florida. It really focused a lot of attention. If you kind of broaden it out, and there was a pretty strong and vigorous discussion still going on now about mm-hmm. civil rights springing out of that case, do you feel like anything positive has come out of that?
I think the positive that came out of that is bringing some challenges and some issues that have already been there within our society to the forefront. So I think it brought people back together. So the diverse of people who marched with Dr. King, you're looking at his marches and you're seeing individuals who identify as white or individuals who identify as Jewish marching with this African-American Baptist pastor from the South. I think that same image came to the forefront for the Trayvon Martin case. Was you saw all individuals from various backgrounds, various walks of life, who actually came together to say, no matter what, this was wrong. And we have to do that more to change some of the negativity that has plagued us and still plagues us as a society. So that right now, I would have to say, was like the most positive thing, was to see so many different people coming together of different ages and cultural backgrounds and identities saying that this needs to change.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, there should be more attention on civil rights anyway, just in the day-to-day course of things?
Of course.
Aside from, you know, these anniversaries which come up, MLK Day, and you talk about Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, is it difficult to keep these issues at the forefront of people's attention?
It is. It's challenging. Some may see it as it's painful history, so why revisit it? Or some choose to ignore it, not to have to address what's going on in current day. I think it's important that we keep it in our forefront. It's important that we keep it in our sight, because it does affect every part of our society. And it isn't just cultural. It does expand across every identity that you can think of when you think about an individual. So even civil rights, you're looking at, we still have women's issues. We still have, again, LGBT issues. Religion is still a conversation. It's important for us to understand this is our society. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're trying to find ways to avoid that awareness of this is our society. And we have to continue to have those conversations around what would make us more harmonious in a sense, or more aware of who our neighbors are. And then how do we interact globally with other individuals who are not like us or who are not us?
Mm-hmm. So would it be fair to say some half a century on from the height of the civil rights movement in the United States, we still have quite some way to go?
Of course. Of course. I don't, it's always funny when I hear we've come so far and look how far we've come. And that's the end of the sentence. But I feel as though we still have further to go. Mm-hmm. We still have some things to work out. So those as such as Dr. King and Malcolm S and Cesar Chavez and everyone paved the way for us to continue this fight for equity and justice. And we still have some time to go.
I want to just circle back to Martin Luther King Jr. Do you get the impression that people are fully appreciative of what he did and what he signified?
Yes and no. I think it's generational. I think some of the individuals definitely do have an appreciation for everything that Dr. King has had done for our society. And I think that it's something that's going to be a continued celebration. I do think that there are individuals who have probably tried to inspire their lives from the teachings and the guidance and mentorship of Dr. King, so that way they can have that energy to still be advocates for their causes. So I do think that there is some, yeah.
Do you get the sense that with these modern debates or mm-hmm. the debates, present day debates over things like marriage equality, for
right.
example, is there the same kind of broad consensus of support that there might have been for example, the struggle for civil rights for African Americans back in the 1960s?
I would think so. I would definitely like to think that those who do not identify with various issues are supportive because they're looking at it from a this is something that we don't have the right to tell someone else what they can or cannot do type of thing. So I would like to think that those who identify as Christian are supporting those who identify as Jewish or Muslim or anything of that nature, because it's spiritual walk. It's a way of how you find your peace in your life. The same thing with sexuality. I would like to think that those who identify as heterosexual are being supportive of the LGBTQA plus community because it's love. How can we define what love should look like or what it is to look like? So I would like to think so. I would like to think that it is that the diverse support across the board of various social issues. Yes.
I've been speaking to Zakiya Brown. She's the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Affairs at Rollins College. We've been talking about events to commemorate Martin Luther King Day, this week in Central Florida. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Up next, 90.7's Amy Kiley looks at the rise in hate crimes in Florida. Hate crimes have risen in Florida, according to a recent report from the State Attorney General's Office. It compiles data from 2012, the most recent year studied, and shows the rise comes after years of decline. To try and make sense of those numbers, 90.7's Amy Kiley spoke with Kaiser University Law Professor Kian Ware.
So I'm here with Professor Ware, a law professor and the legal affairs chairperson for the Florida Civil Rights Association. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
In legal terms, what is a hate crime?
A hate crime is any crime that's motivated by any enumerated categories, such as race, sex, religion, ethnic origin, sexual preference, age. And it's committed against that person solely because of that.
Why do you think hate crimes rose in Florida in 2012?
Well, that could be for various reasons. One of the things that's interesting that's missing from the information that the Attorney General has provided is the information regarding the defendants. So we don't know who is committing the crimes. Who are the people who are saying we believe that someone should be targeted for some enumerated category? So the problem with the data is that we can come up with various reasons, generally speaking. You could come up with a number of general reasons, but the specific reasons we just don't know because they're not telling us who's doing the crimes.
Orange County had the worst numbers in the state by far. I suppose it's the same kind of question, but can you guess why it might be happening here so strongly?
You know, when you look at the numbers, it may not be because we have a degenerate population. It may be because we have a great sheriff. It may be because Sheriff Demings is telling his deputies and his lieutenants that they need to be more proactive in weeding out people who are targeting people for something that's enumerated, such as race, sex, et cetera. So, and we can also look at the city of Winter Garden. They're also highlighted in the study as well. So the same issue may be there. We may have a great chief out there who's telling his officers, do your job. Not only do it, but pay attention to what's being done and why. Let's look at the motivating factors of actors and the defendants and to determine how we can better protect the community. So the public shouldn't immediately just be scared or frightened when they say, oh, hate crimes have risen. It may be because we have some good law enforcement officials saying, you know what, we're going to end this foolishness regardless of who's committing it.
How do you prove it's a hate crime? How do you prove the person's intent in the matter?
Well, intent can be proved circumstantially or directly. You can't open up a person's mind and find out what they did. But what you can do and what the jury instructions and the law allow is that you can use circumstantial and direct proof. So you can use things like what they said while they were fighting. Let's say if someone's fighting and they're using racial epithets. That would be an indicator of further intent. If they are targeting a specific person in a group of people and that person is different than the rest of the people, that could be evidence that perhaps that it was a hate crime. So you prove it by showing the facts surrounding the event. What was said? What was exactly done? What were the circumstances? And you couple that with the underlying elements of the crime.
2012 was the year George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin, and the federal government is considering bringing hate crime charges against him. How can you apply what you just said to that shooting, and how is that not double jeopardy?
Well, I'll address the second part first. It's not double jeopardy because you're dealing with two different sovereigns. The Supreme Court has ruled that when the federal government and the state government prosecute someone, even for the same crime, it's not double jeopardy because you're dealing with two different governmental entities. And the whole double jeopardy idea was designed to prevent one government from going after a person for the same crime more than once. And the thing that really is most disturbing about the George Zimmerman case, it was that Trayvon was profiled. And what's important about profiling is that race is not always dispositive. It's not always the singular factor. What you had a man who looked at a young man, and it appeared from the evidence that was presented in court that Trayvon was arguably profiled because of the time of the day, because of what he was wearing, because it was dark, because of the way he was walking. So it would be a hard case to establish that he was profiled just because he was black. There were more than one legitimate indication that a person could use to come up with some type of profile in that particular instance. So if they want to try to establish some hate crime in that particular instance, they would have to show that George Zimmerman somehow evidenced hatred towards Trayvon because of some enumerated category. But the greater problem for the government, if they pursue George Zimmerman, is the DOJ finding, Department of Justice finding, that they couldn't find any evidence early on in his prosecution. They came right out and said we haven't been able to find any evidence of intent based on an enumerated category.
Could that incident either have made law enforcement more likely to recognize hate crimes and therefore have affected the statistics from that year in Florida? Or could it have made some people more likely to commit them because they were upset about that incident?
Both. I think you have an instance where you have, at least in the Black community, a longstanding belief that the criminal justice system does not value the lives of young Black men. And as a former prosecutor from the 18th Circuit, I can tell you there is a disproportionate impact of the criminal justice system against young Black men for certain crimes, not all crimes. And that can create Black rage. And it's just true. These young men can get angry at the system and they will lash out in some instances. Does it affect all Black men? No, because I didn't do it and I'm Black. But ultimately, it would make also law enforcement more proactive in their approach to how they police. Again, when you're dealing with the Orange County Sheriff and the Chief of Winter Garden, they're being more proactive in addressing these crimes because, again, they don't want the issue to explode. And that doesn't mean that other law enforcement officials are not addressing the issue. It's just in the study, Winter Garden and Orange County were cited as two areas where hate crimes rose. And clearly you can't attribute anything nefarious or wrong to the law enforcement agencies in Orange County or in Winter Garden or any other city when we're dealing with these crimes.
Here we are 45 years after the death of Martin Luther King Jr. and we're celebrating his holiday. Given this new report, how far have we in Florida come since he lived, and how much further do we have to go on civil rights?
Well, you know, that is a good question because the definition of civil rights has really evolved. At one time, it was that civil rights didn't include people of color. And we saw in the last century that was changed through the civil rights movement. And now civil rights has evolved, according to some, to include gay marriage. And where will it evolve next?
How has society's response to hate crimes changed since the time of Martin Luther King Jr. in that now we have these laws in place that offer some kind of definition about civil rights, as you were saying, but people are breaking the laws?
The issue that we're facing today, and we just have to be honest about this, we have to find a balance between morality and rights. We've got to find the balance. We cannot simply just say, do whatever you want to do, regardless of the consequences. But we can't say, you must follow my mandates and dictates of my book, regardless of what you think. We have to find the balance. And if we don't find that balance, we're going to find ourselves in a dangerous place. So when we look at the idea of modern day civil rights and why are people breaking the laws, it's just because we're becoming a more coarse society.
That was 90.7's Amy Kiley speaking to Kian Weir, who's the legal affairs chair for the Florida Civil Rights Association. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.